12-7-2-9, United States v. Dixon. Mr. Wilmoth, hello.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Thomas Wilmoth on behalf of Defendant Appellant Shannon Dixon.
Could I just start you out, because it seems that she got some fairly substantial breaks, and the government didn't file, you know, an enhancement information based on her prior drug possession convictions, and it used only the amount of heroin attributable to Dixon rather than the conspiracy at large, which was a little bit of a shock. And here's what I'm really worried about. Are you certain that Ms. Dixon wants to risk resentencing? It seems to me she could really do a lot worse.
I have no hesitation in asking for a remand under the circumstances of the case, that she would not do, should you grant this appeal on her behalf and remand for a full sentencing, that she will do any worse than 35%.
Can you speak just a wee bit louder? I'm worried about...
I have no concern on her behalf that she would do worse if you were to remand for full resentencing. Now, I understand that the ultimate sentence imposed represents a 50% reduction from the low end of the applicable guideline range. In fact, it represents a 2% reduction from the statutory mandatory minimum. But the appeal is not about the substantive reasonableness of the sentence, which was, I agree with you, Your Honor, substantively reasonable. And the appeal is not about this chief judge considering the guidelines to be mandatory, obviously. But really what it appears to be that in this particular case, the court considered the low end of the guideline range to be mandatory since it was simply going to focus on and make its determination for the ultimate sentence in this case on the defendant's substantial assistance.
And but you do understand why I am worried, because the statutory maximum and the statutory minimum is almost always calculated on the total amount of heroin involved in a conspiracy rather than just the amount attributable to the defendant. And, you know, all hell could break loose. But, all right, we're past that.
Right. There was a joint agreement between the parties prior to sentencing as part of a plea agreement that the relevant conduct was between 100 to 400 grams of heroin. I mean, there was an agreement. The government is not going to attempt to convince the court that Ms. Dixon ought to be held responsible for more than that amount of heroin. And, in fact, one of the arguments made at sentencing that the government required her to plead guilty to that amount of heroin based upon her own self-disclosure, that there was no independent evidence that she was responsible for more heroin, a disclosure made uncounseled while under the influence of heroin. What this appeal is about the procedure utilized by the district court in arriving at the sentence. That's all that it's about.
I'll take your word for it that that's what it's about, because really it couldn't be about anything else. I was very surprised to see this appeal. But it seems to me what the district judge was doing was he was being very careful to make sure that in considering any sentence below what you all seem to have stipulated was the mandatory minimum, rightly or wrongly, of 5 years, the only thing he could consider was the value of the substantial assistance. And so he's trying to make sure, you can see him being very careful throughout, that he's not through the back door bringing in other considerations. He values her assistance at an even greater level than the government was suggesting. So instead of a 45-month sentence, it winds up being a 35-month sentence. But it seems to me that's all as it should be. I mean, the judge is saying, suppose we're at 60, you know, now how can I go below 60 months? And that's how we know that that's what he's doing, because he's very clear in the record that all I can look at is the value of the assistance.
And the parties were very clear about that, and we didn't ask the court to reduce the sentence from the statutory mandatory minimum of 60 months, which incidentally, so the record's clear, that's the right statutory mandatory minimum. There was no basis to enhance that sentence for a prior felony drug conviction. That was the right statutory mandatory minimum.
Well, what I worry about just parenthetically is the fact that this conspiracy obviously involved a kilogram of heroin, and the statutory minimum for that would be 10 years.
Mm-hmm. But that was what was as charged. And then after further consideration, the government dismissed that indictment as it related to Ms. Dixon and found that would be more appropriate for her would be an information charging 100 grams or more of heroin, making it a 5-year mandatory minimum.
Okay. I mean, so we're not worried about that. I mean, since
right.
the government
and
would
you
be
know,
the one to have to complain anyway.
In response to your question that you were surprised by the appeal, with all due respect, Judge, I mean, there were 3553A arguments here. I understand why you'd be surprised if there was a substantial reasonableness issue raised here. I mean, it was a terrific sentence.
But I was surprised based on what even this information said she was doing. I mean, you know, she's involved in a heroin conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And even at the 100-gram level, it seemed to me, based on many of the sentences I've seen in drug cases, that 35 months was an extraordinarily generous sentence for, a little less than 3 years.
Which is why the issue is not the substantive reasonableness of the sentence.
And I don't see where the procedural issue is either. I know you're trying to say there needs to be like this two-step process going from the guideline down to the, you know, but he starts at the 60 months.
Well, I don't think he does. I think he starts at the 70 months. I mean, we really don't know where he starts, and that's the problem. But there is one thing we do know, and the record is clear. He never, the chief judge, district court, never addresses any of the 3553A arguments advanced. And, you know, you talked earlier in another appeal that you don't like this argument about or this discussion about whether it's a stock argument or a non-stock argument, just that your concern is it an argument that the court should grapple with? And I think that there were arguments presented on this defendant appellant's behalf that the district court should have grappled with in determining, when it evaluated substantial assistance, to go down from the guideline range, 70 months, which it's clear I think that he did, as opposed to the statutory mandatory minimum.
So in what cases has this bifurcated 3553A mm-hmm. process that you're arguing for happened? Because I certainly know, you know, you calculate the advisory guideline range and then you start thinking about 3553A, but I haven't seen cases in which 3553A itself splits up into different threads.
Right, and I don't suggest that.
So have you seen any case law?
No, and I don't really suggest that that's the process. But, you know, if the law says that you can't consider 3553A to reduce a sentence under the statutory mandatory minimum, you can only consider substantial assistance or safety valve if that's involved. If that's what the law says, it would imply then that before you determine how much one comes down from the mandatory minimum, if at all, that you still look at, you do have to have a step in the proceedings where you look at 3553A to determine whether you do that reduction from substantial assistance from the guideline range versus the mandatory minimum. Let me put it to you another way, and maybe this makes clear. I think, look, this sentence was basically about how much should we credit this woman in imposing the ultimate sentence for her substantial assistance. But that's only about, and this is a rough calculation, 75% of the sentencing proceeding to which she's entitled, because she's also entitled to a consideration of the statutory purposes of sentencing set out in 3553A in the context of arguments made on her behalf, which are arguments that this district court, I submit, should have grappled with about whether her criminal history category 4 substantially overrepresented her true criminal history and risk of recidivism, about her remarkable post-offense rehabilitation, about her fully self-disclosed while under the influence of heroin without counsel, her relevant conduct. It was from her that they learned eventually how much relevant conduct she would agree to for purposes of sentencing. Those are issues that I believe the court should have grappled with, separate and distinct from the all-important substantial assistance, about which she did remarkably well, admittedly.
Thanks so very much. Mr. Clark, come on. I'm sorry. Mr. Lipscomb, come on up. Unless you'd like Mr. Clark to do it for you.
I'd like Clark Kent to do it for me, Judge. But may it please the Court, I'm Bill Lipscomb from Milwaukee, the U.S. Attorney's Office there. I think really the ultimate question here that is raised on a procedural issue is whether or not the record below is sufficient to allow meaningful appellate review, and I think it is here. It's certainly clear, as the Court has articulated, and I think even counsel agrees, this is not an unreasonable sentence for the type of activity that's involved here.
So what Mr. Wilmoth would like you to show is where in this sentencing record do we see Judge Klobert taking into account the other 3553, you know, the initial ones that you would have in any case, even if the government had never opened its mouth and said, let's reward her for cooperation.
Right. Assume there's no mandatory minimum at play here, right? And we're starting at 70 months without mandatory minimum. I think, let me say what I think the judge did, and then I then incorporate that if that's okay. I think what the judge, if you read the record in its entirety, he's looking at the cooperation as driving his decision, right? But he's also looking at her addiction. That's his focus in terms of, I think, what would be the 3553A type factors. He engages her in a colloquy, a significant colloquy for, I think it's something like 10 pages of the record. God knows how long that actually took. What happened? Did you get treatment at what point? Did the agents, you know, help you get treatment? And he concludes from that colloquy that her addiction really drove her behavior, right? And when you look at the statement of reasons then, when he articulates at least briefly in those statement of reasons why I chose the sentence I chose, he says, in part because of substantial assistance, in part because of motion of the defendant for a reduction or variance, a sentence outside the guidelines that was not objected to by the government. Well, those are those 3553A type factors. The only one he really articulates in that explanation is her addiction, that really drove her offense conduct. I think, though, if you look at the other 3553A type factors that the defendant has raised, the self-reporting of the relevant conduct, the overrepresentation of criminal history, her defendant's rehabilitation, those all in a way derive from the addiction, right? It's really talking about the same thing, but it's talking about it in a different way. If we looked at those convictions that are there, that argument was not developed very much, certainly at the sentencing hearing, but those are offenses that look like they're caused by a person who's got a heroin addiction. They're retail theft offenses, that kind of thing. Overrepresentation of criminal history then comes into play there. That's sort of subsumed in that discussion, that decision by the judge. Defendant's rehabilitation, well, that moves from the addiction in the first place. The drug amounts coming from essentially the process of her cooperation. And the judge mentions that, I think at page 44 of the transcript, he mentions the drug amounts involved, I think the words there are, involved in these offenses resulting from her cooperation. I think it's a little ambiguous, and I probably overstated in my brief, the import of that. But it does indicate the judge is cognizant that these drug amounts are coming from, whether they're drugs that are taken by the government off the street, or I think in context that drive her sentencing, that he's given that some consideration. And that's all that's really required. So the court can say the judge looked at what the defense was concerned about here and made a reasoned decision that we can look at and say, yeah, this is reasonable and it followed a reasonable procedure. I think that's has occurred here. If you back up and say, okay, what will we do in response? What should the Court of Appeals do in response? Send it back for a Palladino-type remand? Say, Judge, are you willing to consider these other things that perhaps you didn't fully consider? You could do that. A full remand, I don't think it's justified by the record.
Well, this isn't Palladino either. I mean, we don't want to overuse Palladino.
Right. I think that's right, Judge. The question, though, is at what point, if we have concerns about the record, where do we step in and say, Judge, did you consider X? What right now in my office the practice is at the end of a sentencing hearing, Judge, the defense raised the following mitigation arguments. Did the court consider these arguments? So that we can handle it at the district court level.
That sounds very helpful, actually.
It is, but in my view, the burden should probably be on the defense. I know the court hasn't put it on the defense, but they're raising the argument. And if they want to preserve it for an appeal in a meaningful way, show that the court has actually, the district court has considered it, it really should be on the proposing party, I think, rather than the party who doesn't want to write an appellate brief. So, but based on the entirety of the record, I'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you very much. How much time? 1 minute. I'm so sorry. I feel terrible today.
All right. Very briefly, I mean, the law is clear that I didn't need to stand up at 5:30 after an hour and a half talking about cooperation and say, remember about the overrepresentation of criminal history and about the remarkable offense rehabilitation. The law doesn't require me to do that. Judge, make sure you address that. And it was addressed in a lengthy sentencing memorandum, et cetera. One last thing. I beseech the court to strongly consider to not affirm the district court because Margaret or Shannon Dixon, she did really well for herself. She did fine. She's entitled to, because the sentencing was fair. It's okay. Don't risk getting worse. But she's entitled to something else. And she's entitled for that proceeding by which the court arrives at that ultimate disposition to be fair, procedurally fair. And her lawyer argued for her on issues that the court should have grappled with. And I don't know why the court wasn't concerned. It just wanted to talk about cooperation. That's not procedurally fair, and it's not right. So,
you were appointed.
I was.
And boy, you've done a wonderful job. And the court is very grateful to you. And to you, too. And on we go. That